Welcome to Season 2 and another edition of The Informed Gardener with your host, Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott, Associate Professor and Extension Urban Horticulturalist at Washington State University. And now, the science behind gardening with Dr. Linda.
Hi, I'm Linda Chalker-Scott, and welcome back to Season 2 of The Informed Gardener. I thought I might start the season with a little explanation about why I do what I do. What my mission is to make the science behind gardening fun, accessible, and useful. There's some specific benefits I think you'll get if you just spend a little time with me each week. First of all, you'll get garden information that's based on science, and you'll find out that this is really important for the health of your plants and for the health of your wallet. Secondly, you're going to learn how plants work. I'm trained as a plant physiologist, and so it's really been my passion to explain to people how plants work and why they don't work maybe like you do. Third, you're going to learn how to analyze marketing claims for garden products. One of the things that drives me absolutely crazy is some of these products that promise all kinds of wonderful things for your garden and turn out to do nothing except take money out of your wallet. So I'm going to help you make smart decisions about how to spend your money on these products. Fourth, I'm going to help you learn to reduce use of fertilizers and pesticides on your garden. That's going to help you in terms of your workload, it'll help you in terms of your wallet, and it will help your environment. This is going to save you time and money, and it's going to make your garden more healthy as well. So not only will listening to the podcast give you information to make these smart decisions and save yourself a little bit of money, you're going to improve the health of your garden, and you're going to improve your own health mentally, physically, and spiritually. Every week I try to have a theme that goes along with whatever season we're talking about for gardening. And even though it's a little bit after Halloween, the theme for this week is scary gardens. So we're going to look at some things you can do to make your garden a little bit less scary. But before we do that, let's look at some scary garden news. This first news item comes from the UK Sunday Mercury, and I tell you, the Brits just have weird science all over the place. It's so much fun to read this particular blog. And this one is called Giant Insects Undone by a Lack of Oxygen. So what you first have to understand is that hundreds of millions of years ago, we used to have some pretty good-sized insects, giant flying carnivorous dragonflies that had wingspans of about 2.5 feet. Think about that. That's a pretty darn big insect. And we know they existed because the fossils are there. All that's left is their little tiny cousins. Why aren't the big ones here anymore? Well, this has been something that's puzzled researchers for over 100 years, trying to figure out why we don't have these giant flying insects. And finally, a scientist in the UK has come up with an idea that seems to have good evidence behind it. What he thinks is that the lack of oxygen in water in our current climate is what keeps us from having these giant insects. So you have to remember that insects usually have a larval form, and dragonflies, stoneflies, mayflies all have aquatic larvae. If you have a giant insect, you're going to have giant larvae. Oxygen is not as available in water as it is in the air, so it's a little harder to breathe oxygen if you happen to be an aquatic insect larva. But in prehistoric times, there was a lot more oxygen available in the water, and so you could have these giant insect larvae that were easily able to grow to giant sizes and then molt and become giant insects. So with more oxygen in the water, you could support larger insect larvae. Well, then climate change came along, and what's happened is we have less oxygen in the water now than we used to. Well, this is a problem for the bigger insect larvae because they're not able to get the oxygen. They don't survive, and so they start to die off. And that's what we have left now are the dragonflies, the stoneflies, the mayflies, the ones that have these aquatic larvae. They are small enough that they can get enough oxygen to survive and then molt to become the flying insects that we see in our gardens. I guess one benefit, though, is if we still had those giant insects, you'd have to keep your pets indoors when you were gardening, or one of them would easily fly off with Fluffy. Our second news item is from sciencedaily.com, and this one's called Gypsies, Graveyards, and Mysterious Plants. There was a graduate student at Mississippi State University who had been studying plants in the Rose Hill Cemetery in Meridian, Mississippi, and he found a grass-like plant that he'd never seen before, could not figure out what it was, didn't match any of the manuals that he was using for identification. So he finally contacted someone from the USDA who came out to help him identify what this plant was. It turns out that this mysterious plant is a blue sedge. It's not native to our part of the country. It's not native to North America at all. In fact, it comes from Asia and Australia. So how did this plant come to the United States, a relatively small area in Mississippi? Interestingly enough, it turns out this particular graveyard in Meridian, Mississippi, is the final resting place for several members of a royal gypsy family. And what we think happened is that the visitors from all over the world came to visit the cemetery to pay their respects to Kelly Mitchell, who was known as the Queen of the Gypsies, and she was buried here in 1915. What the USDA scientists think happened is that all these visitors came from all over the world to pay their respects and tracked in seeds of this plant either on their clothing or maybe in soil of plants that they left at the gravesite. Once this plant got established there, then it could be easily transported by cemetery caretakers, because they've actually found this now in four cemeteries in this same little tiny area of Mississippi, but still no place else in the United States. So why is this a scary thing? Well, it turns out that this plant, this blue sedge, is a very aggressive growing plant. So it looks like it's yet one more invasive plant that's been introduced to the United States in a very unusual way. Part of what I do as an extension horticulturist is answer people's questions. And I get hundreds, if not thousands, of emails every year asking questions about any garden topic you can think of. This time of year, I get a lot of questions about how to get gardens ready for winter. So in other words, how do we put our gardens to bed? And one of the things that comes up repeatedly is a type of mulching called lasagna mulching. Now, this sounds great. You think about lasagna, and it's tasty, and it's comfort food, and it tends to be one of these things that appeals to us emotionally. And so we make this jump in our heads that, gee, I like lasagna, I like making lasagna, and boy, I bet my garden would like lasagna too. If you look at what lasagna mulching is, it involves putting down sheets of newspaper or cardboard and then putting compost in between these sheets, and so you're actually building something that looks like lasagna on top of your soil. The reason for doing this, supposedly, is to keep the weeds out and prepare your soil for the winter so that when you come back in the spring to plant, it's all ready to go. The problem is that making this type of lasagna mulch involves using sheets rather than nice chunky mulches, and we have problems when we look at water and oxygen moving between the atmosphere and the soil. When you have a nice chunky mulch, something like bark or wood chips, water and air can permeate easily. So you get rainfall and oxygen comes down and can permeate into the soil very easily through the mulch. If you have a sheet there, and whether it's cardboard or whether it's newspaper or landscape fabric or anything that's a flat sheet, it's going to stop that process or at least slow it down. So you've got this sheet here, and actually in terms of lasagna mulching, you've got several sheets, and that just reduces the amount of water that can permeate through, and it reduces the amount of oxygen that can go through as well. And sure, this stuff will break down eventually. That's what it's designed to do. It's cardboard and newspaper, and it's all organic. It breaks down. But the problem is, before it breaks down, you're going to have this oxygen deficit and possibly even a water deficit underneath that paper. So it's just not a really very good idea because of the oxygen stress that it puts on the soil organisms and your plant roots. And this is why it's scary, because what you have is now kind of a smothering environment, and for all these organisms that depend on oxygen, this is not going to be a very pleasant way for them to live. The interesting thing is that one of the benefits of using lasagna mulches, and this is why people swear by them and by sheet mulches in general, is that they say that it brings the earthworms into the soil. And it's true, if you use a sheet mulch and you pull it up, you'll see all kinds of earthworms right there underneath the surface. But think about this for a second. Maybe the reason there's lots of earthworms there is because that's the only place they can find oxygen. You know, when it rains, the earthworms always come up to the top of the soil, and they'll be crawling over your driveway and on the sidewalk, and you step on them and squish them, and it's all icky. But this might be what they're doing under those sheet mulches. They're trying to find more oxygen, and the only place they can find that is right next to the surface of that sheet mulch. So I don't think really that sheet mulching makes more worms come in. What I think it does is drive worms to the surface because there's no oxygen underneath. With this new season, I think I'm going to add a little bit of a new component, and that's going to be including some seasonal garden tips. So right now we're going to be in the fall-winter season, and you might be wondering, what exactly can I do when nothing's growing? What should I be doing right now? Well, today I'm going to tell you about the three P's. The three P's are protect your soil and plants, prune your trees and shrubs, and plant nursery plants. So we're going to look at all three of those. The first one is protecting soil and plants. Well, we just finished talking about lasagna mulching and why it's probably not a great way to protect your soil, but mulching is a great way to protect your soil. What it's going to do really is make a nice, warm, toasty cover for your garden over the winter. You already know that if you've gone from your summer sheets and now you're putting on the winter flannel sheets and you're putting on the blankets and the comforters, you're going to be doing the same thing in your garden. You're going to be trying to keep that soil warm so it doesn't freeze, because there's all kinds of things right under the surface of the soil, your plant roots, a lot of neat organisms, you don't want them to freeze. So we're going to cover them up with a nice comforter of mulch. That also is going to help a lot of your plants that maybe aren't the most hardy things in the world. Gardeners really like to push the envelope on what they can grow, and so we tend sometimes to plant things that maybe aren't quite as cold hardy as they should be. So if you cover them up with mulch, that sometimes will protect their roots enough so they'll survive until next year. So that's the first thing, protect your soil with a nice layer of mulch. The second thing you can do, and this is really kind of fun because this is the aesthetic part of gardening, is you can do some pruning of your deciduous trees and shrubs. After all the leaves have fallen off these plants, they're dormant, and you don't have to worry about pruning stimulating any new growth. This is a good time to look at the branch structure. Do you have any crossing branches, or really bad angles, or branches that are a little bit damaged or diseased? This is a great time to be taking those out, pruning them up, making it look prettier, so that next year when the leaves come out, you've got a nice, beautiful crown structure. So pruning is a great thing to do this time of year. And the third thing is to plant your nursery plants. So if you've had things you bought at the nursery in the spring and didn't get around to it, or you bought them in the fall and haven't planted them quite yet, fall is a great time to plant, as long as you live someplace that's temperate. If you live someplace where the soil freezes pretty hard, you might not be able to plant this time of year, but for most of us living in a temperate area, we can do some planting. The reason that we like to plant in the fall is because roots never really go dormant. So the sooner you can get the roots into the soil and then protect that soil with mulch so it doesn't freeze, the plants can start getting their roots established while their crowns are dormant. So the resources are going towards root growth, the crowns are dormant, and you've got a jump start on spring when the leaves come out. It's kind of a miserable time to be working outside, but your plants will thank you for it. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. I really am glad to be back doing season 2 of The Informed Gardener. Be sure to listen next week when our theme will be real turkeys. This podcast is only one of the ways I provide science-based information for use in your own garden. For more, be sure to visit my webpage, theinformedgardener.com. It's my official Washington State University webpage, and it's full of great and free information. You'll also find archived podcasts from our first season there. Second, please join me and three of my colleagues at the Garden Professors blog. It's at gardenprofessors.com, and the four of us take turns posting on just about any gardening topic you can imagine. You can even add comments if you feel so inclined. And finally, for those of you who will never give up books until they're pried from your cold, dead hands, I've written three books that might be of interest: The Informed Gardener, The Informed Gardener Blooms Again, and Sustainable Landscapes and Gardens. You can find out more information on all three of these books at sustainablelandscapesandgardens.com. In any case, I hope you found this podcast entertaining and useful. I welcome listener comments and questions, and please email me at lindacs@wsu.edu.
You've been listening to The Informed Gardener. For more information on Linda's books, future podcasts, as well as other stories and articles she's written, please visit informedgardener.com, gardenprofessors.com, or sustainablelandscapesandgardens.com. Thank you to Large Media, executive producer and production direction, and the WSU faculty and staff. Happy gardening!